Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, finn@offbeatoregon.com. And this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy this show. This is one of the most horrific shipwreck stories in the history of the state of Oregon, or California either, because it happened right off the border. The shipwreck of the Brother Jonathan today is best known as Ground Zero in a big old squabble over treasure. The sidewheel steamer's sinking was a major maritime disaster for Oregon, but treasure hunters found the gold-laden wreck in 1993, which touched off a big, undignified catfight with the state of California over salvage rights. It was in California waters that the Brother Jonathan eventually ended up. This story was first published on January 9th of 2011. Here we go. On the afternoon of July 30th, 1865, 3-year-old Charles Brooks burst into tears. Charles was staying with his grandparents in California's Napa Valley while his mother, Mrs. A.C. Brooks, and his aunt, Mary Place, journeyed to Portland. Charles had been perfectly happy there until a little after 2 p.m. when he suddenly melted down and could not be consoled. His puzzled grandparents did the best they could, but he would not stop crying. And all they could get the little guy to say was something about his mother and Aunt Mary going down in water. More than 300 miles away, just off the Oregon-California border, Charles' mother and aunt were drowning, along with 223 of their fellow passengers on the sidewheel steamer Brother Jonathan, in the cold waters of the North Pacific. And somehow, if the following week's Oregon Statesman newspaper, which was the source of the account about little Charles, is to be believed, he knew. The Brother Jonathan was a 220-foot paddle-wheel-driven steamer, built in 1851 in New York and owned for some time by Cornelius Vanderbilt. Like many other East Coast steamers, it had been brought around the Horn during the latter days of the California Gold Rush. It became an important ship in Oregon history. In 1859, it was the Brother Jonathan that brought the message to Oregon that it had been admitted to the Union as a new state. This was especially symbolic since Brother Jonathan was at the time the name of an imaginary mascot for the United States, like Uncle Sam. The Brother Jonathan's last day in the sunlight came 6 years later. The steamer was on its way from San Francisco to Portland with 244 passengers and crew. On the way, a storm tormented the ship and eventually got bad enough that the captain, having gotten as far as Rogue River, turned the ship around to bring her back to Crescent City for safety reasons. On the way back, just offshore from the borderline between California and Oregon, a particularly lusty wave picked the Brother Jonathan up high and the following trough spitted the ship on an underwater granite spire. It began to sink immediately. The first of the Brother Jonathan's complement of Francis Patent metallic lifeboats, launched in the storm with about 40 people aboard, had just pulled away from the wreck when a breaker roared over it. When it was seen next, it was upside down. The second lifeboat didn't even make it that far. A wave crushed it against the hull of the Brother Jonathan before the crew even had the oars out. The only survivors of this disaster were 19 people on a small surf boat that somehow made it to shore. As for the others, a classified ad in the daily San Francisco newspaper Alta California put the crassest possible epitaph on their watery graves. Quote, "We venture to say that everyone aboard the Brother Jonathan would have been saved if they had had Houston, Hastings and Company life-preserving vests," it clucked. Considering that many of the bodies that washed up on Oregon and California beaches after the wreck were sporting life vests, this claim was certainly questionable and was in terrible taste. But there may have been something to it. At the time, many life preservers were stuffed with tulle, which provided minimal flotation and eventually became waterlogged. I haven't been able to learn if the Brother Jonathan was equipped with tulle-stuffed life jackets or not, but in water as cold as the North Pacific, the question is close to irrelevant. In 50-degree water, cold is the real killer of shipwreck victims. A common version of this story has the captain of the Brother Jonathan noticing the ship was dangerously overloaded but sailing anyway after being told he'd be relieved of command if he did not. This is possible, but I have not been able to find any credible original sources for it, and it would be utterly out of character for the captain of a major passenger ship to allow this sort of interference with his command. And it would not be easy to find a commanding officer to replace one who had quit under such conditions. After the wreck, the beach was littered with debris washed up on shore, including the ship's wheel, which can now be seen in the lobby of Dan and Lewis's Oyster Bar in Old Town, Portland. But plenty of other things didn't wash up on shore. In the hold of the Brother Jonathan was a substantial shipment of gold intended to buy off the territorial claims of a number of Native American tribes. So naturally, treasure hunters wasted very little time in getting to the scene. For well over a century, nobody got anywhere with these efforts. The range of ocean in which the ship might have gone down extended from Crescent City all the way up to the mouth of the Rogue River. Nobody knew for sure where it was. Then in the 1930s, a fisherman pulling in his net found a crumpled rusty mass in it, an old Francis Patent metallic lifeboat. Wedged under one of the seats, the fisherman claimed, was a rotten leather valise containing 22 pounds of gold. I use the term claimed because something about this story isn't right. Leather doesn't last 70 years under 250 feet of seawater, especially not in a crab fishery. Unfortunately, private possession of gold was illegal at the time, according to this story, so the fisherman hid his find away. By the time gold ownership was legalized again, he couldn't remember where he'd found it. Or so he claimed. Perhaps he'd found it in a bank vault someplace and needed a story for cover. Who knows? In any case, it wasn't until 1993 that a high-tech treasure hunting expedition found the wreckage of the ship in about 250 feet of water off the coast, just south of the border, touching off a legal argument over salvage rights to historic shipwrecks between treasure hunters and the state of California. Even after the U.S. Supreme Court found in the treasure hunters' favor, the state persisted until it was bought off with a share of the treasure. And I have to speculate that had the treasure been found in Oregon territorial waters instead, our state would have shown a little respect for the rule of law. Coins recovered from the Brother Jonathan shipwreck are still on the market today, and a Google search will bring up sources. Well, that's our show for today. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to the podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a series of live history shows, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone newsreader, a Facebook page, a couple other minor components too. Photographs and other visual goodies that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon History for fun and to learn things, so I don't jeopardize that by selling advertising or asking for donations. However, if you enjoy Offbeat Oregon History and you'd like to support it, you can always pick up a copy of my book. If you enjoy this show, I can pretty much guarantee you'll enjoy the book. It's called Wicked Portland. It was published by the History Press in 2012, and they're available at community bookstores, or you can order a signed copy from the store link at offbeatoregon.com. Sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Our next show will be coming your way around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.